One afternoon in the autumn of 1851, a solitary horseman, followed by a pack mule, was pushing through an arid stretch of country somewhere in central New Mexico. He had lost his way and was trying to get back to the trail with only his compass and his sense of direction for guidelines. Under his buckskin riding coat, the traveler wore a black vest and the cravat and collar of a churchman, a young priest and a priest in a thousand, one knew at a glance. His manners, even when he was alone in the desert, were distinguished. He had a kind of courtesy toward himself, toward his beasts, toward the juniper tree before which he knelt, and the god whom he was addressing. Those first lines from Willa Cather's Death Comes for the Archbishop set the stage for the entire novel, a young priest riding through the middle of the varied landscapes of New Mexico. Wyoming Catholic College senior Catherine Stipa chose Cather's novel as the subject for her senior thesis in the fall and her senior oration earlier this winter. Taking a break from interviewing Wyoming Catholic College faculty, I asked Catherine what attracted her to Willa Cather and to the novel Death Comes for the Archbishop.
So I've loved Willa Cather since high school. Both my parents have read her. I think that's kind of how I inherited my love for her originally. And then I chose her for my junior author. We do the junior author project our junior year here. And I just took my love for her to a deeper level. I think I was pushed by the professors in that way and decided to continue working with her for my thesis.
Great. And why the particular novel?
Great question. So for my junior author project, I really zoomed in on her Prairie trilogy. My Antonia in particular is kind of considered her magnum opus, if you will. But Death Comes for the Archbishop is probably my personal favorite, simply because I'm from Tucson, Arizona, and it's the land that I grew up in, the land that I know best. So,
now, you said in your oration, the landscape comprises the overarching presence in the novel. It is the fabric of the novel, the thing all about one, the world one actually lives in. Tell us about that and add your experience about growing up in the desert as well.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, Cather is just known for her descriptions. When you've read one of her books, you can always look back on it and you can picture what it looked like, where you were, the trail, the trees, the flowers. So she really just has this descriptive force as far as recreating a scene. And then in Death Comes for the Archbishop in particular, it's such a vast and empty frontier. She really creates the feeling of lostness, sort of the obliterating desolation of the desert. And for the Bishop Latour in the novel, it's where he spends the greater part of his life, just on the back of a mule, surrounded by the sea of desert, so to speak.
Now, she talks in there as well about the ancient people and the Native Americans. How did they live out the landscape?
She is fascinated by the Native Americans. They come up in multiple of her novels. Part of the reason she is so interested in the Navajo in particular is she had a Navajo for her guide when she spent time in the Southwest traveling herself. And she just noticed sort of this peculiar tendency that they had to accommodate themselves to the landscape instead of vice versa, right? Just trying to erase any sign of their presence in a landscape. And this was something totally new to Cather, something she hadn't really encountered before in a culture. And she goes so far as to even say that her guide, this Navajo man, had sort of a resemblance to the landscape. He seemed to embody it somehow in his mannerisms, in his calm, in his peacefulness. So she goes on about that.
Now let's go to Father Jean-Marie Latour, who becomes the archbishop. What's his story, and how does he then relate to the landscape? He's not from the desert.
No, he's from France. Archbishop Latour, in her novel, is based off of the real-life Archbishop Lamy, who is a French Jesuit from France. He spends his first years in America in Ohio, actually. He despises it. It's really difficult for him. He kind of lives in the Ohio suburbs, and he finds it soul-sucking. And then he gets assigned this new diocese. You know, they want to send a young bishop to this immense frontier.
This is Latour.
This is Latour, yep. And so he, you know, it takes him an entire year just to get there. And when he finally gets there to this sort of outpost of Santa Fe, he doesn't even have accommodations ready for him. The church is somewhat in shambles, you could say. The priests who are in power are corrupt. So he has a lot of work to do. But to even get that work done, he has to, you know, saddle up his mule and go ride his horse or his mule for months across the desert just to get anywhere. So in that way, that's how he becomes close with the landscape. He starts mapping. He's close personal friends with Kit Carson, which I think is really, really cool, really fun. Yeah, so he really gets to know the canyons and the landscape of his diocese in a very intimate way. Even just being sensitive to the kinds of flowers that grow there. He says he loves the juniper tree that he finds at the outside of every Mexican home. So he, by the end of his life, is very, very close with the landscapes in his diocese.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge, my goodness. Yeah. Even today with driving between Santa Fe and Albuquerque and Gallup and,
goodness. Yeah, and he, you know, we're talking, he would go up to Denver, down to Old Mexico, to Tucson, just immense distances, unbelievable on a mule.
You talked about how the landscape he lived in was reflected in his interior landscape. What did you mean by that, and how is that the case?
Yeah, great question. So that was sort of the main part of my talk, my senior oration, and I really wanted to just do a close reading to show how an interior of one of Willa Cather's characters actually resembles the landscape. And to do that, I really looked into his spiritual life. He experiences sort of these frequent episodes of spiritual dryness, right? Where he loses the spirit of God, what Cather says. And then spontaneously he'll be filled with grace, you know, the grace of the Blessed Mother after a prayer or after celebrating the Mass, say. And I showed how this really resembles sort of this theme or this motion throughout the novel, this change in scenery from desolation to life, from, you know, the monotony of the barren desert to, you know, a lush Indian or Mexican village that he'll stumble upon in the middle of nowhere. So I just sort of lined those things up and showed how there's a really interesting parallel going on here. And it's actually quite striking how intentional it is when you really look at what Cather's doing there. And then I think she goes so far as to suggest that his memories are bound up with the landscape itself. He can't leave New Mexico at the end of his life when he's an old man. You know, everyone expects him to go back to his native France, to die there, sort of in comfort. But he finds that the landscape has become a part of him somehow, and that to leave would be to leave the whole of his life and all of the memories that he has there.
Now, is that true of all landscapes, do you think? I mean, you know, for example, here in Lander, you know, on the edge of the Alpine Wind River Mountains and on the edge of the high desert here. Mm-hmm. Is that true of any landscape? Is that true of all of us, do you think?
I would like to say so. Yep. I'm not sure what Cather would say. Every single one of her novels has a particular landscape and particular characters who are attached to that landscape somehow. And, you know, Wyoming Catholic College is in Lander for a reason. You know, this location was selected carefully. So I think my instinct is to say that Cather would suggest, yes, you can have this sort of intimate connection with a landscape that sort of blurs the lines between interior and exterior and expands your imagination anywhere, or at least ideally you could have that anywhere. But I do think it takes work, it takes time spent outside, it takes training yourself to be sensitive to landscapes, and of course it helps to have a voice like Willa Cather in your head to get in touch with where you are, for sure.
Now, while the Navajos took sort of leave no trace to an extreme, and the settlers often built what Cather calls the hideous houses and churches, the sordid aspects of the towns and countryside, showing no respect for the beauty of the land, mm-hmm. The Archbishop is building a cathedral, mm-hmm. and he wanted something different. Talk to us about the cathedral.
Right, right. So that's funny you mentioned that quote. She's actually talking there about the Ohio suburbs. So Catherine is very opinionated when it comes to architecture. But yeah, another big part of this oration was to show that while, you know, she does sort of idealize this extreme leave no trace lifestyle of the Navajo, she's also incredibly practical, Catherine is. And all of her central characters are the first people to settle the frontier, to make some great change on it. You know, whether it's the Prairie Trilogy, where she talks about, you know, the farmers, the first farmers who cultivated the land, or here in the Southwest, she really zooms in on the cathedral for the Archbishop. That's his great, great life's work. And that is sort of the structure that embodies his connection to a landscape. And Cather really goes out of her way to describe not only the entire process of building this cathedral, but just also the vision of the bishop and how it's a beautiful cathedral because it's his idea, you know, born from the landscapes of his interior, so to speak. So yeah, she's very optimistic as far as what man can build and how beautiful it really can be, sort of an articulation of a landscape.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you prepare to graduate in a couple of months, what do you take from your study of Willa Cather?
Well, I think I will always be going back to her books again and again, especially this one. I still haven't finished the entirety of her works. There's a couple of stray books that I haven't completed and some of her short stories as well. So I think I'll set out to finish that. But for me, Willa Cather will always be the great interpreter of landscapes. She's sort of the one who taught me how to open my eyes to the land beneath my feet.
At the end of her thesis, Ms. Stipa writes, "The desert landscapes of the novel preserve some element of wilderness. A spirit of the frontier as wild as the sound of the wind that blows over its empty plains. Man must give himself over to this spirit, let his soul be caught up in it, his body bleeding into it, his whole being dissolved into it. Cather's landscapes possess the power to transform him, to resurrect his spirit into the dawn of the world, into the morning, into the morning." At the novel's close, she goes on, "Bishop Latour is prepared for his final repose, to be buried in the earth and joined to it in death as he was throughout his life. I will die in Santa Fe," the old man smiled. What's in your backyard? What's the landscape in which you live? And how is that infused into your life and into your faith? Interesting questions, and possibly a reason to pick up Willa Cather's Death Comes for the Archbishop. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.